The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
Hey Al, you ready? Let's do it.
I love that prime record scratching.
You don't hear it anymore, that's why.
Exactly. You just don't hear that anymore. Like it's a forgotten art, I think.
This is just a button push now. Hello everyone,
yeah,
welcome
true.
To
or it's an, or it's an auto tune.
Final Play Podcast. This is NRL Round 22. We'll get straight into it. I mean, the first game was a Thursday game. It was the Storm Raiders. The Storm end up winning 26-16, but Raiders is one of those. We've got the wood in the last couple of times, but they're one of those bogey sides for us. And then the score reflected that as well.
It's just one of those teams where like the teams have team matchups where they just don't match up very well against them. Doesn't really matter where they are on the table. It's just whether it's scheme, whether it's players. It's just like you said. It's just one of those bogey teams, and it didn't really start off well for Melbourne. Like in the first minute, having lost Dal Finucane to a HIA, which was a little bit of a funny one. It was a HIA, yes, but it was, I can't remember if they said that him himself was the one that said that I'm not going back out there, or he cleared protocols, but the team's like, nah, we're not sending him back out there. It was a bit of a funny situation to start.
Yeah, I thought it was the team that made that decision of when I sort of looked back at it. The team ended up making that decision, which is good.
But he did pass the HIA protocol.
He did pass that
way. Yeah, so it was a bit odd.
Yeah, but then, I mean, you know, could have been a lot of factors. Could have been his age. Could have been they just want to keep him healthy for the finals kind of thing.
No, that's it. But you know what I mean? Like you said, you know, it's a bogey team for Melbourne, so I don't know why you'd not want to have all troops on deck
True.
It's not so much, you know, Melbourne's got this, you know, got this win streak to sort of protect. But do you know what I mean? Like it's a little bit funny the way that they did it, and you know, Canberra sort of come out and punched him in the face early with Simonson scoring out on the left wing there. And
one of his first three tries.
No, that's right. It was basically a Jack Whiten to Bailey Simonson show, really, for the Raiders. But look, they come out super physical defensively, and you know, their line speed was so up in your face for Melbourne, and it was Melbourne handled it okay, but do you know what I mean? I guess they'd sort of come out and with a clear plan to sort of try and rattle Melbourne that way.
And you know, you mentioned Jack White, that's what he needs to do, I think. I think he had it last year, and he might have lost a little bit of that loss of this year. But when he holds that ball a little bit longer and runs, people are in two minds of what he's going to do. And then he can sort of throw that cutout or outside ball to Bailey Simonson. So, Melbourne, I guess, like you're right. Defensively, everything was getting thrown at them. And then they, except for that sort of third-minute try, they sort of kept the wood and then got their, you know, three tries, their only three tries actually in that sort of first half once they sort of got that possession back on their side.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and look, Canberra couldn't really, you know, had probably a bit better of possession towards the end of that first half and then going into the second half, but they just couldn't quite capitalize on their field position. You know, Melbourne defensively don't give up a lot of points anyway. It just looked like that they just sort of strangled Canberra sort of out of the contest, and then basically, you know, it turned into a bit of, you know, a penalty-a-thon. Once we started to get past that halfway mark of the second half, and Melbourne, that's me, Melbourne even looked, you know, not very crisp in attack, and they couldn't crack Canberra's line towards the end of it, even though they had plenty of possession inside the 20.
Yeah, I felt, I don't know, I guess you're right. I felt that, you know, they're winning at halftime that 20-4 lead, and I don't know if they took their foot off the gas or I don't know. You're exactly right. I just felt that they, well, Canberra did get more of the ball, but it felt like they took their foot off the gas in that sort of second half. Like that, they were, I guess, feeling themselves a little bit in that 16-point lead.
Good teams. Good teams have got the right to do that, even with Melbourne, sometimes even though when they do put the cue in the rack, they still look a lot better than what they did in the second half of this game, and it just Canberra, well, you know, was sort of their own worst enemy too, mm-hmm. you know, with mistakes and poor fifth tackle options, which is, you know, sort of. Yeah, and that's you've got to be on top of your game, and you've got to be perfect to try and get past this Melbourne Storm squad at the moment, because they're just playing too well.
Yeah, and well, in that kind of game, it had to be sort of someone, I guess, experience slash a bit of moxie that had to stand up, and Cameron Munster end up sort of controlling that game towards the end, at least. Even just a sort of simple, like he didn't have a lot of kicks in the first half, but in the second half he had I think he only had the three kicks. I think it was three kicks. Yeah, you know, he had three kicks, but it was just the amount of meters that he sort of got out of it. That's a thing that, like, four kicks, sorry, for 143 meters. So
he's got a big boot on him.
Yeah. So and that. You know, well, what's that average out to? That's over 40. That's over 40 meters, or nearly 40 meters per kick. So that sort of turned it around for Melbourne. At least his sort of go forward. He just sort of took control of the game and got them home, basically.
No, that's right. And then it sort of ended on a little bit of a sour note, with the Corey Harawira Naira, send off after the botched. Shall we say, up and in your defense, you know, up and in your face defensive run out, and he absolutely just rocked Jerome Hughes with a tackle that's gone horribly wrong, and it didn't look, you know, that they were trying to, yeah, it's at Melbourne attacking your line and they're trying to force them into a mistake so they can try and get back into this game, because they were right there or thereabouts, like they're only 6 points in arrears or 8 points in arrears. And it just went horribly wrong, for Corey, and he rattled Jerome Hughes and that sort of a couple of penalty goals sort of late towards the end of the game.
I guess
iced the game there for Melbourne.
That ended up being the telling factor, because they pushed him out to an 8 point lead to get him sort of that home. So you're right. The last two
and
of
it
them.
Josh Hodgson's penalty, their own worst enemy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Josh Hodgson got that other penalty. A couple of dangerous tackles he had, actually. So, you're right. They made sort of the penalty shot. So, good win by Melbourne. They're doing what they need to. They'll keep that win streak alive.
Just charge on.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's pretty much it. They got Parramatta this week coming, I think. Parramatta's a wait and see, I think. I don't know what to say about Parramatta. I know we'll get into them later, but they're probably just a wait and see at the moment. So next game is the Panthers having Nathan Cleary back, beating the Dragons 34-16. We probably said this with Dubois, but it really made a difference, didn't it?
I mean, they've looked a little flat as of late. You know, they've recently just got enough done to get the wins. But with Cleary sort of back this week, I think they were just being a little cautious over the last couple of weeks to try and not rush him back, because he's imperative to them in their title aspirations for the year. So, they had their backs against the wall a fair bit in this game, especially to start with. Like the Dragons had multiple opportunities at the start of this game to try and put a lead on, and they couldn't do it.
They just
weren't challenging Penrith defensively at all, really, from the get go. Like they did eventually sort of score not so much early, but yeah, they did finally get over with Ravalawa getting over, but they'd already let, Penrith score down the other end when they hadn't been down there for that often. And, you know, Brent Naden went straight over and made it look easy. Mm. But yeah, it was just no capitalization to sort of get St. George. They were getting good field position and they just weren't making the most of it.
Yeah, look, and I think you're right. I mean, it could have been, to me, it felt this just as simple as having Adam Clune in there at the halfback.
I don't mind Adam Clune. Like, he's obviously no Ben Hunt, and Ben Hunt's not going to be there. I think we sort of said that before, that he's not going to be there for another couple of weeks yet because he's got a fracture in his arm. But it's just strange sort of positional changes that Anthony Griffin is doing as well. He put Jack Bird at fullback, and I just don't think he's got the stamina for a fullback, just the way that his body is at the moment. Like, he's a big center to start with. Yeah. They've sort of dabbled with him in the halves. They've put him in the second row, and for that, you know, for a big body guy to be going back to fullback like that, you need a lot of stamina for that, and there's only a certain amount of guys that are out there that can do that.
He pushed out to 96 kilos because I looked this up. And not his fault, because they basically said they were going to play him in that sort of back row position. So
that's right.
And they're putting him more beef on, you're right. And it's just, you know, 96 kilos is fine, but he's what? I mean, look, he's 4 centimeters taller than me, and I'm about 20 shy of him, or 26.5 shy of him. So what I'm getting at is that's a lot of beef for, you know, for a 5'10", 5'10", 11 guy. Like, that's.
Yeah. For a fullback, that's just too heavy. Unfortunately, that's just too heavy.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely heavy. You mentioned Brent Naden's sort of first try. He got a couple. He got that sort of second try too.
That was off an intercept, and that was just Corey Norman just telegraphed the pass, and Brent Naden just swooped straight through the line and grabbed that, and I thought that sort of Corey Norman was less than impressive in this game, to say the least.
Yeah.
But even so, like, Penrith in that first half as well, like, they made like 7 mistakes as well. They were like 20. They were like 12 for 20 in the first half. So they weren't uber impressive either in the first half. So it just took them. I think it took them a little while to sort of, you know, get into gear. Once St. George were just proving no threat offensively, then I think, you know, Cleary started to get into a bit of a mood and started to take over the game a little bit. And once again, it's that control factor.
It is. And plus, he attacks the line too. I mean, he really does. Like, he's not
afraid to get hit. And that could prove costly as the season goes on, because he's got this shoulder problem that they've been shielding him from, you know, over the last couple of weeks to try and get better. He eventually will need surgery on this shoulder, but as far as it goes, this is the best that it can be without having surgery. So if you're a smart team, then you will just constantly challenge him defensively. You will just you'll do what sides do, and you know, the only reason I notice this is because the team that I support, you do what a lot of sides do with Tom Dearden and the Cowboys. They run a lot of traffic at Tom Dearden, and he can make upwards of 25 to 30 tackles a game. But it's only his goal line defensive tackles that are usually, you know, more, you know, much to be desired. But, you know, in the defensive line, you know, outside of the 10 meters, he's pretty good defensively. And that's basically what you've got to try and do to nullify Nathan Cleary.
Yeah, no, you're right, and you're exactly right. But he's pretty elusive. You're right. I mean, he's only going to take one or two decent sort of hits on that sort of shoulder, and he'll
There's still a few more. Yeah, there's still a few more rounds left before we start getting into the finals, and then the intensity is going to be right up there, and it'll just be, I guess, how well that shoulder holds out.
Well, Well, okay, so look, you're right. There's probably a couple of, there's, what, there are three rounds left, I think. So 23, 20, yeah, I think there's three rounds left.
Three rounds left after this,
so
yeah.
They didn't lose too many with him away. Like, you know, they end up in those last five games, they were 4-1, so pretty good without him there. I'd Monaco, like, you know, I'd wrap him in cotton wool, but, you know, they were pretty good with Matt Burton in the 5-8 and Jerome Luai in the halfback. Maybe do that for a couple more games and sort of, you know, get him ready sort of the final. You're right. I mean, he played, when he played 75 minutes, he probably didn't need to play 75 minutes in this game.
I think you could make a case to do it in the mold of what Melbourne did with Ryan Pappenhausen. Ooh. and you know what I mean? And just bring him on nice and slowly.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. And yeah, just to bring him along slowly, you know, get back used to the contact and things like that and the speed of the game and get your fitness back into it. And then, you know, make sure that he's in, you know, prime physical condition and in form again for a finals charge. But, you know, in saying whether you want to rest him or not, you don't really want to give up that top two position either, because all you've got to do is win in the first week of the finals and whammo, you're straight into a preliminary grand final qualifier.
No, I agree. Like,
you don't want to jeopardize that.
No, you're exactly right. They've got an easily winnable game against the Tigers this week. The Rabbitohs have got the Roosters. So if the Roosters sort of pull that out, then they'll be four clear. Then you could probably rest him for, you know, one or two games, because they're four and against is.
But he'll want to play as well.
Well, that's the thing. So you've just got to manage it. That's all I'm getting at, is manage it better if you want him prime for the finals, because looking at their team, and, you know, it's always sort of chopping and changing, but they're not going to have the team that they have right now next year. Not at all. So, I mean, there's a few of them going, obviously, like in Brett Naden, Matt Burton. Kickout still doesn't have a contract at the moment.
No, which is a bit odd, isn't it?
So I'd say it's clearly just money.
And that's right. And whether or not his agent or his manager is looking for too much, and they're just like, well, we can't fit that into the salary cap right now, so we've got to wait until season's end before we can really, you know, start to crunch the numbers so we can fit him into this side.
He probably is worth that money. He's had, like, you know, this year it hasn't been standout. The last two or three years before that, he's been their top forward.
No,
he
that's
really
right.
Had. And him and Fisher Harris.
It's the same thing. It's the same as, you know, it's what have you done for me lately? So, you know, they'll be looking back at, you know, performances this year. They're not worried about the lost premiership that was last year and the year before. They'll be looking at that this year, and unfortunately that's what teams will be looking at anyway. You know, management and the player themselves will definitely be going, hey, we've been good for the last couple of years, so, you know, you should totally pay us heaps of money.
You're right. Next game was a Friday night, another Friday night game in a half decent crowd up at Suncorp. But the Roosters, barely pulled this out, 21-20 against a very, I'm calling it Hardfield because I can't think of the other word, Broncos side.
Well, this was sort of part two of the Friday the 13th horror show that was Friday night. In this, because the Dragons definitely put on a horror show in that previous game, and this was just such a bizarre game that had a really strange ending. The first half, I guess, was fairly competitive, and the first thing that I sort of noticed out of this too, that props scored the first two tries of the game, which is something that you don't generally see. You know, Payne Huss scored the first one, and
Payne Huss, you could sort of half put money on, but you're right.
You could, but that's, I mean, it just generally doesn't happen that the first two try scorers in the game for both teams were prop forwards, which you just don't see all that often. But look, I thought as well, something that was worth noting was a very good aerial battle between Xavier Coates and Daniel Tupou, which, that most of it was on the side of, you know, the attacking side of the Roosters going at Xavier Coates, and he proved up to the task to keep Daniel Tupou out of it. And, you know, it was, I thought that was sort of a really good sort of game plan, I guess, by the Roosters to try and tuck, because Coates has been a little sort of up and down with his handling, especially under the high ball. And you can generally bank that Daniel Tupou is fairly safe in that regard. So I guess a good plan to start with, but they didn't continue that on, I think, as much in the second half, because you cut off one side of the field when you do that, and you've got to have a little bit more variety in attack. Especially like Brisbane's been pretty good defensively over the last month or so. So you've got to really work hard to sort of knock Brisbane off.
And it ended up being sort of tit for tat, really, wasn't it? Sort of the one try for the other, then a 1-point field goal, then a penalty shot made, and then another penalty shot made, like it was literally just, it felt like tit for tat. Unfortunately for, Flegler, dangerous tackle sort of in that prime 20, 25 meter sort of position
And that was the thing as well, with the way that happened as well. But even before that, the referees sort of set a little bit of a precedence about this game, which I was hoping wasn't going to continue, that, once Tedesco had made a terrific break down the middle of the field, he got 5 meters away from the line. And David Mead comes across basically as a second man in the tackle. And 100%, I'm not even going to say 99%, 98%, 97%. He 100% raked the ball out of Tedesco's arms as he was trying to sort of bring him down and tackle him, which is a sin-binable offense.
Yeah.
And they got the penalty, but he totally should have been in the bin for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the referee felt the need that, You hear it on the broadcast. It's like, I felt it wasn't deliberate. And it's like, you've stripped the ball. Generally, that means it's deliberate.
Exactly.
So I couldn't understand that call. And, the way that both teams, sort of, like you said, tit for tat, as they just looked, they were trying so hard in the second half, but both teams just couldn't quite get attack right. And then it just went absolutely burko in the last 10 minutes or even the last 5 minutes of that game, once Sammy Walker hit that field goal, to sort of put the Roosters up. And then we had two extremely controversial penalties. Like you said, it's a penalty goal to Selwyn Cobbo, which resulted off, it was a poor.
Victor Radley.
Yeah, Victor Radley, a poor charge down challenge.
It was definitely a penalty.
No, that's right. But I still thought that Albert Kelly milked it perfectly by lying on the ground like a big starfish, and maybe reaching for the legs a little bit. But what are you meant to do in that situation? I know you can't attack the legs, but you see it a lot that after a drop goal attempt that players get hit. You see it after a kick in the field, just a regular infield kick, that kickers get hit in the legs and nothing is done about it. So I thought that was an extremely controversial penalty, and it was followed up, like you said, by the Flegler one, which the Roosters challenged because it was basically a Flegler who come out and knocked the ball out of Daniel Tupou's arms, but in doing so, he's hit him across the face. So it was very lucky that they ended up getting that. And, Adam Kieran, a lot of that goal didn't even look like it was going to miss.
It was the perfect successful, or is it perfect captain's challenge? Really?
That was the thing. They were looking at the fact that the ball was knocked out, and then they wanted to try and get the ball back in that regard. But he'd slapped, Daniel Tupou across the face, and by the letter of the law, that's contact with the head, and that's a penalty.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. We said it before, it was tit for tat, but I don't know, you mentioned it earlier, the Broncos, the last sort of 4 to 5, even 6 weeks, have been, they're a team that if you're sort of not up for it, they could either beat you or you're going to lose, or you're going to win either right at the death or it's going to be a hard sort of win. In terms of the Roosters sitting in fourth position, I don't know if that bodes well against the Broncos, as in, yes, it was a win's a win, but it wasn't a great win. Really?
No, that's right. And the Roosters, kind of Yeah, the Roosters, you know, to their credit, are still hanging on to that sort of top four position. And basically with the half the salary cap that people have got at the moment because they've got half of it sitting on the sidelines injured.
True, but...
Unreal. It's unreal the amount of players that they've got out, you know, on long-term injuries, and they're challenging for a top four spot, like yeah. you know, and once again they could be one win away from being in a preliminary final in the third week of the finals. Do you know what I mean? If they could somehow knock off, you know, a number one or a number two side, then boom, they're in. They get the bye. Do you know what I mean? Like they're so within striking distance, but they're just running out of healthy troops.
Well, it'll be the test next week. So they got the next game that we'll talk about, but they got the Rabbitohs third versus fourth, and that'll be the telling of where they're at, I guess, without all their sort of injured players.
We'll see, and that's it. We'll see. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. They've just got to not lose any more players. Like,
well, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. No, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, that's they got to not lose any more players. I mean, look, the next game with the Rabbitohs beating the Titans pretty comprehensively, 36-6. They just shut out the Titans just expertly. Wasn't a great halves sort of game for the for the Rabbitohs. The halves weren't great in it, but effective enough to sort of shut out the Titans.
No, well, that's right. And all the damage was done in the first half, basically with being 24-0 up, and it just got off to, you know, basically the worst possible start with the Latrell Mitchell try inside the first 5 minutes. And it was the first time that the Rabbitohs had been inside the Gold Coast red zone, and, you know, the Red Sea parted and they went straight over, and it just wasn't going to get any better as this game sort of went on. Look, and to be fair to the Gold Coast, this game could have got a hell of a lot more out of control. In patches, the Gold Coast did well defensively on their own try line and did repel Souths away in patches. But, you know, Souths are a quality side, and we know what the Gold Coast now we know what the Gold Coast are like. You know, they're there or thereabouts, but when it comes up to the quality sides, they basically just can't.
They're just
withstand.
Missing those key sort of players.
I think they've got the key players there. They're just not playing very good football at the moment, and you know that once again they're dealing with sort of their own injury crisis at the moment, and you know they've got some guys coming back, and they've got a young half there in Toby Sexton, who's sort of proving that he could well and truly be the future, future either halfback or 5'8" there if Ash Taylor decides to be moved on or he moves on himself. But they attack the edge as well, the Gold Coast defensively they crumbled, and they crumbled often.
They did. Yeah, well, they did. And you mentioned the halves, like, you know, they weren't. It'd be interesting to see the Titans with a new halves pairing. I think Toby Sexton, you're right, is their future there so far. Looks fairly the goods, but I mean they're going to have that nice bit of cash flow of Ash Taylor's money coming up. So obviously he's not going to get paid what he's getting paid next year. You're probably right. Like, he hasn't signed anything. He hasn't sort of done anything. He'd probably stay on a lesser salary, wouldn't he? Would that be sort of the way you'd think he's going?
I would hope so for the Gold Coast point. Okay. I'd hope that they would sort of, you know, might be able to negotiate. Well, there's the number floating out there of around 350,000 that I think a few teams have committed to possibly throwing out there for Ash Taylor. So whether or not if the Gold Coast can sort of, you know, meet that, but that, yeah, that's a
how
huge,
much does it say, sorry?
350 I'd sort of
okay.
Heard.
So I'll put it to, that's interesting. I'll put it to you this way then.
Well, that's a $650,000 pay cut a year.
Okay. So that roughly equates to this person I'm just about to say. So right now then at 350, would you take Ash Taylor or would you take your current halfback in North Queensland for next year?
I would absolutely take Ash Taylor.
Yeah. That's just interesting, like, just how much of, I guess, a little bit of fall of grace of 350 to what Dearden's getting at. Well, Dearden's contract is about that 350, probably 330, 340. But
a little bit less than that, yeah.
So it's interesting, yeah. Like, you know, what I'm getting at is if that was the case, if they held off and then offered that to Ash Taylor, that'd be very, very interesting. Him being at the Cowboys, that would
exactly. But yeah, then that's the thing. You've still got to land him. That's
the problem. He's still 26. So he's not.
He's got plenty of time. And like, you know, for the Rabbitohs, you know, they just keep on keeping on. yeah, 10 straight wins now for them. 8 straight weeks now with 30 plus points. Which is the first time ever in rugby league history in this country since 1908. So that's I guess another record that the Rabbitohs are sort of putting up there. And yeah, like you said, that they've got to sort of push their heavyweight credentials going forward. As we enter. Yeah, the final 3 weeks of the competition. So this game, they weren't really challenged much by the Gold Coast. So whether that's good or bad for them going forward.
Yeah, no, they got the Roosters next week, so that'll be a very good game. Latrell was on fire in this game. The other player that was on fire was that interchange Totola. He only played half the game, but he did a massive 22 runs for 200 meters. That's awesome.
Big for a prop. That's big for a prop.
For half a game, that's huge. So, you know, yeah, he was, yeah. I guess they just really couldn't tackle him.
Well, that's the formula for success for the Rabbitohs. Bash you up the middle and then try and attack you around the edges. And they've got guys like Cody Walker and Adam Reynolds who like to attack the edges well. And, you know, just have a look at the fruit that's been bared on that left edge. Doesn't matter who's been out there, whether it's been Josh Mansour, you know, or whether it's been Alex Johnston, it's been a very, you know, successful side for them to attack down there. So that's what the Rabbitohs are all about. So yeah, they've got a fairly accomplished halves pairing there, which, you know, some people were saying that this should have been the Origin halves pairing going into game 3 and not the way that they went. But you know, that's the thing. It's they're on a good. They're on a bit of a hot streak at the moment, but yeah, their premiership credentials. Well, their premiership credentials will be tested over the next couple of weeks.
I'm just saying it would have been very interesting if that was the case. They got those halves pairing. That would have been interesting.
Well, it's like going forward, and now the Rabbitohs, you know, as of next year, are going to have to be, you know, they've got to be on the lookout for. Probably not so much taking someone at a discount, but it's, do you know what I mean? They've got to be now looking at either bringing somebody in from their juniors or looking at an established half that they can bring in to pair with Cody Walker. And this year is a massive one for the Rabbitohs if they're going to sort of, yeah, to win a premiership.
Yeah. And well, again, another team that's probably, you know, this is probably the last year they might have that sort of chance. So,
no, that's right.
Next game was your Cowboys going down to the West Tigers 24-16.
And, you know, look, you know, once again, they give away way too much early possession, North Queensland, and that's kind of been the story of the year. They're made to pay for their mistakes. You know, they generally pay a heavy price. They've got one of the worst completion rates in the league. They make the fourth most errors in the competition. So it's just once you put yourselves on the back foot, you know, so early in the contest, you tackle yourself to a standstill. And when it comes to the back end of the game, when generally possession will start to even up, you've got no gas left in the tank. No. And you give yourself so much to do towards the end of it. And you can't dig yourself out of the hole.
No. And that's how it sort of, it felt like they got them to a point. You're right, where they couldn't sort of dig themselves out of the hole. they're not a bad team, Cowboys, is sort of coming back when they sort of need to. But it's like, it's, I think I've said, I'm sure I've said this about them three or four times. It's a bit of a little bit of too little too late.
No, it's too little too late. Like that flurry in the last sort of 6 or 7 minutes in the game. Well, where was this desperation and where was this sort of attack earlier in the game where you don't have to give yourself so much to do towards the end of it? And they couldn't get the ball, especially in the second half. They just could not get any quality possession inside the Tigers' 20-meter zone. It was just so hard for them to try and put any goal line pressure on them. And it told towards the end of it, because you could see that, you know, once they did get a little bit of sustained pressure in there, that they could score tries.
Yeah, they can. You're right. This is too little, too late. But they shouldn't have fell this far behind.
No, of course not.
A Tiger side.
Yeah, right. A Tiger side that's been struggling as of late, and you know, the Cowboys, you know, earlier in the year, sprung a major upset on the Tigers at Leichhardt Oval, you know, earlier in the year, and I guess this is a little bit of payback, I suppose.
Well, it is. It's not a little bit of payback. It is a payback, I think. So the Tigers, I don't know. It's just one of those teams where I don't. Now, I mean, I picked your Cowboys because I don't know how to pick the Tigers.
That's a mistake. Like this is nine losses on the trot now for the Cowboys, and they're starting. Yeah, it's just Todd Payton now is I could only assume is going to start tinkering with this lineup and start. Yeah, sort of throwing some different lineups around. So it's a learning process for him. You know, the Cowboys organization has just got to give him a bit of time, because I do think he is a good coach. So he's very bland in his press conferences, but he looks like he's a fairly straight shooter. So, you know, he pulls no punches. You've seen it at the start of the year where he basically sort of called out Tamalolo after the first couple of weeks, you know, for him to get more involved. So, but that is what it is. And, you know, the Tigers sort of keep their very, very slim mathematical chances.
Oh, God, I hated hearing that.
Yeah, but they still have a slim mathematical chance of making the finals, and that would be sort of, you know, I guess sort of keeping any sort of flame alive in them to try and play well over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, that's probably the only thing that's going to keep them sort of going, I guess. That and that friggin' whatever you want, documentary TV series.
Oh my God, I've not watched one episode. Solitary second of that. I don't know what Fox Sports Productions or whatever they are thought that was going to be interesting to anyone other than Tigers fans.
I like the concept. I'm not going to lie. I just don't like that it's Tigers. I like the concept.
Right. There's a whole lot more interesting teams out there than the West Tigers.
I think it's a cool little thing to do. Just not the Tigers. So, like, because they don't have, like, what, like, who wants to know about the Tigers? Like, if they had something, like, full-on going on, like
yeah, exactly. Let's get an interesting. It's like Hard Knocks for the NFL. Like, let's get an interesting team out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
or but like, why do it in the middle of the season? Like, you know, you do it from the start of the year.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Why do it 2/3 of the way through the season? It just doesn't make any sense.
No, well, we don't know how long they've been sitting on this too. So you're right, it didn't make any sense.
Well, it's all fairly current sort of stuff. Like the way that Fox Sports, you know, advertises and promotes it, it's like the greatest documentary, you know, since The Last Dance. But that's just flatly false. So. You're basically alienating 15 supporter bases. Like nobody else other than, you know, hardcore Tigers fans is watching that. Like nobody. That's rubbish.
But you're right. Like unless they do it sort of like the Hard Knocks sort of thing, and
you got to do it from the start.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, but like if they keep doing it every year and say, well, this is the team we're going to do. Yeah, you either do it at the start or do it in the off season. Exactly. Off-season is perfect. Just before they start, you're right, pre-season is perfect. See the training, see all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, that's the kind of stuff that people might be into. Nobody wants to see all the rubbish, you know, in the middle of the season or anything like that. So let's go into the change rooms and let's see Michael Maguire lose his shit again you know, at a team that's performing poorly. Like, there's only so often you can call that entertainment.
I'd love to see Bellamy's preseason training group.
Oh man,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be terrific. That's entertainment.
That is entertainment. Next game was an on fire Manly Seagulls trouncing the Eel 56-10.
Just decimated, demoralized. A team in Parramatta that's just been so poor as of late. And Manly just been in red hot form. It's just the worst timing, I guess, for Parramatta, who needs a little bit of a pick me up as of late. But the long range tries that Manly are putting on at the moment are just sublime. Like, they're using the speed of Jason Saab perfectly.
Well, they are. They are using, we probably heard his name 46 times, but goddamn, Tom Dravojevic breaking that line, the tackle breaks and line breaks, and the assists. Like, he had four tries. Like, I'm sure I heard his name every, like, literally 6 minutes, but still.
No, like, that's right. Well, no, it's like the picture of that I sent you after the game, basically, where it's Randy Marsh. It looks like he's got he's in front of a computer and he's got this white goo which he claims to be ectoplasm all over him. But NRL commentators when they mention the name Tom Trbojevic. So if you can sort of picture that in your head, that picture there of
yeah, good Randy Marsh.
But that's the way it is at the moment. He's just in such sublime form at the moment that he's, and in this game as well, like, you know, he's been hurt, and I don't know what sort of happens after this. Like, it's a possible fracture of the jaw it basically just came off friendly fire when him and Jason Saab went in for a tackle and he got rattled in the face.
They're a bit sketchy what they want to do with him. They're very sketchy.
Well, that's right. Yeah, is he in? Is he out? Manly saying he's fine. He's going to play next week, but there's, you know, the speculation out there that they'll rest him. He's already got a metal plate in that jaw from a previous injury, so that could be something that's actually saved him. So we're just getting conflicting stories out of the club about, you know, his health and whether or not. Yeah, it's a bit of a smokescreen, I guess, that they're trying to put out there as he goes along, Manly goes along. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, over the coming weeks whether or not they sort of they want to rest him and you know, they're fully entrenched in the eight. So I wouldn't think that they're going to drop out of it anytime soon, but their performances definitely leave a lot to be desired when he's not there. He's just so important to that team. He's just such a threat.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's. It's like since that State of Origin series, he's been just given this card of like saying you can do whatever you want.
Just do whatever you want.
And that's well, how
he
sort
do,
of
he can do no wrong, and Manly can do no wrong when he's playing in that side. Like it's unbelievable. Manly's got three players in the top five of try scorers this year. Ruben Garrick, Jason Saab, and Tom Trbojevic are all in the top three for try scorers, and the only two that are above them are Alex Johnston and Josh Adokar. It's unbelievable.
Tom Trbojevic shouldn't even be there. He's missed so many games. That's just how ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why he
and gets a four. And I think Trbojevic is like top five in try assists as well. It's just
it's a foregone conclusion that he's Dally M player of the year. I'd be very extremely surprised if he's not Dally M player.
Well, it depends on if they, you know, if they rest him or not. Like, you know, if he's missing out on those Dally M points, then yeah, that would be very disappointing.
And Ruben Garrick just, you know, slotting 28 points in their three tries, eight conversions, just Dally M. That's
killed
beautiful.
It.
I've seen it. you're right. They're entrenched. They're going to scare some top four sides. As long as they're healthy, they're going to definitely.
And look, Parramatta just towards the end of that game just totally imploded on themselves.
I don't know. I something's, you know, what is something's going on in
Ryan Madison. Ryan Madison got sent off for a, you know, for a horrendously, you know, once again, like two really bad tackles this, you know, this week for, you know, for tackles gone wrong. Like, he smashed Brad Parker and he was out, but his lights were out before he hit the ground. And he got sent off in that game, and then only a couple of minutes later, Niokora got binned. So they were playing 11 on 13, you know, for between the 65th and 75th minute. And, you know, once Manly smelled blood in the water, like they put on three tries in that 10 minutes while it was 13 on 11. So Parramatta just imploded towards the end of that game, and yeah, they really need to sort of, you know, start pulling their socks up and pull the finger out shortly. Otherwise, they're going to get bounced out of the top four, and they're one loss away from their season ending in the finals.
I mean, there was reports of, like, in team fighting and all that at hotels and read.
I did hear those sorts of things that, you know, better players are getting better hotel rooms and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, my God, like, get the F over yourself.
Well, that's exactly right. You can't, and you don't know the whole story. You don't know if they've put
their
to get these, you know, supposed great rooms and great views and all this crap. So, God, you're staying on the Sunshine Coast, Gold Coast. Just doesn't matter where you stay. Who cares?
Yeah, but they can't sort of, you know, take advantage of it.
No, they can't take advantage of it. It's perplexing. Like, literally, since I've seen them play here, and that when Roosters beat them pretty comprehensively here in Mackay, it's been a downward slope. So,
well, they're just falling off the wagon. Like, I just don't know what it is that it's just a team in just such poor form at the moment. And that's that when you've been doing it for so long, that's hard to pull yourself out of.
It is. It really is. It's very hard to pull yourself out of. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know where they're going to go. Yeah, they're a hard team. I mean, I didn't pick them against this game. They're now in that sort of realm of where you don't know when to pick them, when they're going to win. But they're like the Cowboys. I don't know when to pick the Cowboys. Are going to win, surely going to win soon. I just don't know when to pick them.
I don't know.
That's some extreme confidence. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Well, you know, the Cowboys lost 9 on the trot. Like, you know, where's... The confidence is just not there in that side, and, you know, the continuity's not there, and they're blooding all these younger fellas coming through, and, you know, Tamalolo's not having the impact like he should, and Valentine Holmes has been, you know, back and forth from fullback to wing, and once they get the hammer back, which looks like he'll be back next week, you know, what do they do with their $1 million player? Do they put him in the centres? Do they put him out on the wing? Oh. Like, it's just... Yeah, it's falling. Unfortunately, it's falling apart towards the end of this year, especially after being, you know, hovering around the eight or in the eight. Yeah, before this 9-game losing streak. So it's just, yeah, that's that season's just been totally derailed.
For a team that really hasn't changed their repertoire that much in terms of, like, they don't have to do. You know, they're staying pretty much all in Queensland. They have had their own home games. They have
away games, yeah, and a little bit of travel down to the southeast and back, so which is still they've still got a little travel excuse. But teams like the Gold Coast and the Broncos have zero excuse when it comes.
No, you're exactly right. But then, I'm talking compared to the Sydney teams, compared to Melbourne, they've had to uproot. You know, next game was the first Sunday game. The Warriors beat the Bulldogs 24-10.
Look, wild start to that game too.
Well, yeah,
just boom. You know, Josh Curran basically scored with the first set of New Zealand inside Canterbury's 20, and then the Aaron Schopp intercept try. And it's like, oh, okay, like this could be, yeah, this could be a fairly entertaining sort of game to kick it off, but. Yeah, as New Zealand sort of got, you know, a lion's share of that possession, and they sort of begin to pull away a little bit, but, you know, the Bulldogs being the Bulldogs, they won't go away. And that's sort of been, you know, even though they've been, you know, generally the lesser side throughout this whole season, and basically it looks like they've wrapped up a wooden spoon for the year.
Yeah.
So, but they just, yeah, they just, as New Zealand sort of offensively, that they're a little bit challenged at the moment, but you know, they were up what was it, 16-6 just before half time, and Ockhambor scored basically right on half time, which I wouldn't have thought that Nathan Brown would have been very happy with that. You know, given the amount of possession that the Warriors had throughout that first half, for them to be within striking distance of them going into the second half at 16-10, I don't think he would have been very impressed with that.
No. I don't think so at all. Didn't Adam Fanua-Blake stand out at this game? I felt like I haven't seen him for so long, and then he.
No, that's right, exactly. And it's that's a timely reminder of what a good signing that was. And you know, he's had some injury problems this year, and it's been unfortunate, and that's really hurt the Warriors this year. Talk about a team that, you know, with travel wise, like they've basically spent the better of 2 years in this country and not having. Just sort of, you know, be able to go back to New Zealand. That's tough.
Yeah, that's just that. Yeah, they've had the roughest trot, basically. And you know, pull out wins when they sort of need to in front of I think the next game was in Redcliffe too.
This was a double header. Not a bad. This would have been a nice little double header to go to.
Yeah, it'd be a nice little. This would have been a nice little Sunday. The crowd was up for it. You could hear the. Wasn't a big crowd, but the crowd was definitely...
No, only like 3,500, 3,600 there or something like that, wasn't there?
Yeah, and they ended up getting nearly four to the Knights, Sharks sort of game. So they... it's just a nice stadium. Very, you know, when... I guess I'm assuming when it fills up. I'm just thinking, obviously, expansion here, but when it fills up, just... there was plenty of voices heard. That's
yeah, that's right. You know, they're passionate supporter base there at Redcliffe, and you know that they've got their just dues for, you know, for being successful, and you know, and having a good leagues club that's right there, and having plenty of cash to splash. So you'd like to see a few more games at Redcliffe, because that ground looks pristine.
Oh yeah, it does. It's beautiful, and I like that sea of red. Sort of, I remember they're Redcliffe Dolphins, but even though, like, the red colour's got nothing to do with that Dolphins, I like that sea of red through the grandstand. Sort of just the colour of it.
Yeah, that's me. It's really nice. Look, I guess Canterbury, they sort of had a little bit of a shot there midway through that second half. A little bit of a controversial call, shall we say, where Sione Katoa come through and hit, I think it was Cozzy, as he'd already dropped the ball, but he hit him high, and the ball was picked up and scored by Canterbury, but they ended up going back and having a look at it. And even though that Cozzy had dropped the ball, the contact was high by Sione Katoa, and they basically pulled that try back off the board. That would have really got the Bulldogs back into this game, and they just haven't got the resilience to try and get past that. Once again, they're like the Cowboys. They just don't have any resilience to sort of come back from that. And Canterbury were fairly ill-disciplined in this game as well. Avarillo put up a bomb. I think it was in the 71st minute that went up and then went backwards. So I guess just a tale of how bad the Bulldog season is going this year. Like, that was just – I laughed, and then I sort of felt a little bit sorry because, you know, we've sort of smashed – Jake Avarillo and how many opportunities he gets in first grade, and constantly stays in first grade, whereas Kyle Flanagan goes in, out, in, out, in, out. You know, Lachlan Lewis goes in, out, in, out, in, out of this, but the constant there is Avarillo. And so how many opportunities you want to give this guy? Like, look at what you're getting. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know what they see in him. I don't know what they see in Avarillo, and because they clearly like him for next year with Matt Burton. That's what I keep hearing.
But he's just not going to be anywhere near that halves pairing of Burton and Kyle Flanagan. There's your future right there. And if Burton keeps playing that the way that he is, especially you know, in Canterbury colours next year, they're going to be lot better with the signings that they've made. They're going to be a whole lot better than what they are next year.
The signings that they've made is going to be sublime. It's going to be a great team next year.
Look, and with this many sort of high profile signings of that as well, continuity and chemistry is going to be something that people will look at early on in the season next year, and on how well they can sort of gel together. And I guess sort of gel together. People will want instant success because Canterbury has been pretty bad for the last 2 or 3 years. So that fan base is going to be, they'll be crying out for success and they'll want it quick. And if it doesn't happen, then, I think the knives come out for them pretty quick in the season if they don't, put performances on the board.
I get that, but God, you'd think,
I know, you've got to be patient. Of course you do. But
you just have to temper expectations. You can't just go from last to the top eight, or thereabouts last. You can, but God damn.
People are going to expect it, though.
Oh, that's the problem. They're going to expect it. So, they've got great signings. I love the player anyway. Does Adokar play fullback? That's what apparently he signed for and wanted, but...
I don't know. If he's never played it before, how do you just go from a winger to playing fullback and then playing it well? I don't know how that experiment will work.
Oh, it doesn't like we've said, I guess, with Valentine Holmes, it doesn't matter if you're a high paid player. Play where that suits,
But at least Val's had experience at fullback before that.
No, I understand that, but what I'm saying is he can be a high paid winger or a high paid center. It doesn't make a difference, is what I'm getting at.
You can still have influence on the team these days, especially the way that the game's played. Wingers aren't just catch the ball and put the ball over the line anymore. Like, they're just not that anymore. They're more influential. Yeah, and your good ones are more influential on a team than what a lot of people expect, like Josh Adokar, like Brian To'o. Guys like that. Look at what Brett Morris was doing this year before he got hurt.
Right.
Can't tell me he wasn't an influential player in that Roosters side for the first 10 or 12 weeks of the season.
Oh, he was huge.
It's crazy.
Final game in Redcliffe was the Knights just beating the Sharks 16-14.
Yes. you saw the opening kickoff to this, right? The ball just hangs in the wind and nobody from the Sharks wanted a bar of it. Nobody. And Newcastle gets it back, and then 38 seconds later, Rani Tuala is over in the left-hand corner, and you're like, ooh, if you're Cronulla, that's just not how you want to start this game off, because this is so important for them trying to scratch and claw their way into the eight and Newcastle. Both of these teams are fighting for a top eight position.
That's just that Redcliffe area. It can have some serious.
It was unbelievable how that ball held up so badly so well in that wind, and you're like, dear, it's coming down and it's going to hit the ground.
Yeah, but no one wanted to have a bar of it. You still got it. Even if it's a knock on, then you pack a scrum and then you get set again. You don't just not touch it and not have a bar of it. And then, see, this is what I think. They're so dumb. Touch it. I guarantee if they try to get the ball back, which they did and scored in 30 seconds, that is a lot worse than, marking it on and having a scrum. And then, you're not going to, generally shouldn't score on that first play.
Your line of defense totally rattled. They would have been totally rattled by that. And look, they fought back well in that first half to actually go in at halftime 12-8 up. That they didn't sort of really let it affect them too much in the first half. Newcastle just could not convert any field position into points. Looked like Clifford and Pierce, probably one of the worst games that they played together. Looked like they were just getting each other's way a little bit. I thought Mitchell Pierce sort of had to take a little bit more control over that game, and you know my thoughts on Jake Clifford. He's the extremely one-dimensional, kicking player, and conditions like this are not great for the Bomb. So it sort of took Clifford a little bit out of it, and I thought Mitchell Pearce needed to play a little bit more of a role in this game.
Well, it's good.
Newcastle over the hump.
You're right. I mean, it's good to put up a bomb. It's not good to catch a bomb in these kind of conditions. That is a difference. So it's not.
No, but yeah.
You need that sort of. You're right. No, you're right. With Clifford, you need that sort of those lower kick sort of games, the grubbers or those little mid kicks, which he doesn't do. He just doesn't do. He loves to just. He loves to prove that he's
game awareness, and that's all. I consider.
He likes to prove that he can, boot the hell out of it, and it's got to be the biggest kick in the world. That's
right. It's like he's trying to pop the ball.
He does. Every time, sometimes he kicks it. You know who I think of? And this is going way back. I'm talking back in Bowen days. When Gruber, like our friend Gruber, got fouled. I think it was a Maloney lady that caught it, and he grabbed the basketball and booted the hell out of it over to that aluminium place. Like, literally, that's how long it looks like Jack Clifford held.
That's what he's trying to do.
It held it in the air so much. It was hilarious.
That's what he's trying to do.
Gruber did not like getting called for a foul on that one. Anyway, digressing. It was hilarious. But we all laughed, and then the game was over because no one wanted to go and get the ball.
Who the hell wanted in? No way. That ball would have been two blocks away by the time it stopped.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, even in the second half, the Sharks sort of, they were both sort of well in this. It's like they're both, their offense sort of wasn't sort of clicking to me, I guess, in that second half for both sort of sides.
No, I don't think so. And look, I thought Newcastle got gifted a couple of times with penalties. After the fact that they'd either made a mistake, I think they made a mistake on both times, but Matt Checken, the referee, had sort of played advantage. I think both of them were like inside the 10 calls, and basically sort of bailed Newcastle out of a mistake, especially sort of inside that 20 or 30 meter zone, and they ended up getting one try and one penalty goal out of it, directly off of those inside the 10 penalty calls where. During the play that they had knocked the ball on. So that was really advantageous, I think, for them. But by the end of that half, Newcastle were 20 of 21 completion rate in that second half. So they were doing their best not to try and beat themselves. And look, a two point win for them was enough there at Redcliffe, and that they just put enough pressure on Cronulla to keep them defending their goal line for basically it was like the last 10 to 15 minutes of that game. You hardly saw Cronulla out of their own half. That ultimately sort of led to that win. I think if Cronulla had got up the other end, I don't know if Newcastle would have been able to hold out.
No, I don't think so either. And I don't think so either. And I think Braden Trindle, as a player personally, was fairly effective in this sort of game. I know it was in a losing sort of side, but if they could sort of get back into it, he's not too bad.
He's a good player. I like him.
Yeah, I like him too. Yeah, I think we said this the last couple of weeks. I think, they're doing sort of the same, I guess, that a couple of teams, Broncos probably the most glaring one, where you just sort of tinker with the side, and if you lose, you lose. It's not like, they're building sort of for next year. It's, Like, and you can find certain little gems like this, so to speak. So
yeah, no, that's right.
What are you in terms of the Knights? You're right. I think I mean, we're looking at 7th, 8th, and 9th. I think I looked at it. There's basically three teams sort of going for that. The 7th and 8th position. I mean, we could probably even go stretch it out to 4 teams. You got the Knights, Sharks, Titans, and Raiders. Like they're
I think the Knights have got the easiest run home.
I think so.
And
they've got a little bit better form. I think so.
I'd like to hope that the Gold Coast can sort of put this performance this week against South behind them. But I've got a funny feeling that that next week they've got the Melbourne Storm.
The Knights.
So they've got
the Titans next week.
Yeah, so they've got a pretty rough run home. So I'd like to think that I think Canberra could be a little bit of a sneaky to sort of get in. So
yeah, no, the Storm. You are right. Yeah, no, they've got the Storm next week. So that's we'll see how that goes.
That's a tough run home, and if they want to get into the eight, then they've got to stand up against these big teams and try and challenge them.
I think if I'm looking at those sort of four teams, and I'm picking a seventh and eighth, I definitely pick the Knights. What are we looking at for and against? They're all in the negatives. Ooh, Knights is the worst one. That's interesting.
Yeah, and that's what's going to hurt them, because they've had a few blowouts against them this year, and that you hope that doesn't cost them a top eight spot. So they've just got to keep winning.
I think all of them have to. They're pretty good. They've got 4 points ahead of Sharks, Titans, Raiders. They're all even on 20 points. Yeah, I don't know. Looking at the run home, I'd sort of sneakily have to sort of go with the Sharks, maybe. The Titans would have to be in 2 weeks. Titans would have to beat the Knights
I think, you know, in a couple of weeks that could decide both those teams' fate.
Yeah, exactly. They're just not, you're right, with that four and against, the Knights are lucky that they've got a 4 point sort of buffer. Otherwise, they could be in deep trouble. So, moving on to sort of our start and done of the week. I mean, my start's like, hey,
don't
say the name that got mentioned about 86 times in one game.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah, so I'm going for Mr. Thomas Trebojevic, because it was ridiculous what he did in that game. And I mean, what he got injured in that last 4 minutes. But God, yeah, it's sublime. It's sublime form.
I went with his running partner and Ruben Garrick.
Yeah, and that's easily fair.
Breaks, you know, three tries, a try assist, 28 points. I thought he was, and that's another winger that, you know, that's sort of, you know, been fairly influential, I think, for, and he could fill in at fullback, which he has done before for Trebojevic if he doesn't play next week.
He's filled in at 5'8". I think he's filled in at a dummy half for them at the start of the year too. I think he's a bit of a jack of all sort of trades, Ruben Garrick. I'm sure he played dummy half at the start of the year.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. I reckon he could do that.
So, yeah, well, I mean, you could pick anybody from that Manly sort of game, but they were obviously the two biggest ones. Who did you have for dud of the week?
I did have quite a few actually this week. It became a situation where in that Newcastle Cronulla game where Britton Okoro got pretty bloodied up, and it threw his mouth, and it had been come through the broadcast that it didn't look like he was wearing a mouth guard. Now, any rugby league player that doesn't wear a mouth guard is they've either lost it or they're a fool. So I don't know what the hell happened. And it happened the week before with Cody Ramsey. In the very first minute of the game, he got bloodied up, and it's been found out that he didn't wear a mouth guard. Wear a mouth guard, people. Good God. It's a contact sport. For F's sake, put a mouth guard in.
That's crazy.
I couldn't believe when they said that on the broadcast. I could not believe my ears that they said, doesn't look like he's wearing a mouth guard. That is pure insanity.
This is the same thing, like, to me, of headgear personally. I just think the same thing. It wasn't when I was playing. It wasn't a cardinal rule you have to have a mouth guard and a headgear. Everyone just had a mouth guard because everybody wanted to have a mouth guard. It was just cool to have in kind of thing.
But now
it's completely mandatory as a junior to have a mouth guard. And I think it's I think it's nearly mandatory for most of the kids that I see play.
I think juniors up until like, what are they, 12 or 13 or so, that they pretty much have to wear headgear, or
at least, well, that's, to me, that's, you know, they're talking about stamping out all the head highs and that, like, they're both just as important as each other. That's what I'm really getting at.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So like, I just, yeah, it's funny you said under 12 and 13. This is talk about mollycoddling. This was sort of, well, I might as well sort of give it, my dad sort of ties in perfectly. It's so funny. Mate's a junior, a president of a junior league. Talk about mollycoddling kids. Up to under 13, there is no semifinals and finals. You play the season and that's it. So you don't have their excuse has been last year as well. It started. So you don't have the excuse of then the kids don't feel like they've lost for the sort of season. So if you lost,
yeah. But what? So do they accrue points throughout the season? They get 2 points or a win, no points, or you're just playing just for the hell of it. So you could just make it Premier League style and go, oh, cool. You know, we won 12 games and lost 2 this year. So guess what?
If you,
we win.
They don't post it, but if your team's counting, that's fine. But that's it. There's no, like, there's wins and losses, but it's not. That's what I mean. Talk about mollycoddling. When I heard that again, I had to mention it here because I went, that's so ridiculous. It was a fun. I played up until A grade and all that. But what I'm getting at, when you were under 10s, 12s, 13s, when you won, you'd love seeing that. You'd love seeing the score.
You did.
You'd love seeing semifinals, and you lost. I've lost. You know, you're losing. You just put up with it.
Yeah, that's right. That's part of playing sport.
I don't like that. It's just such a mollycoddling, like, you know, society. I just, when I heard it, I went, oh my god, like, that's.
Well,
so
you used to love seeing in the back of the paper, like, you know, the results, and you know, that's going back a long time now. But yeah, but they would put the ladder up in there as well, and it'd be like, hell yeah, we're on top, like, you know, yeah. Sweet. Yeah, that's what it is. That's what playing sport's about.
The thrill of, I guarantee, because I know I felt it when I was under 9s, because I end up getting the winning try. So what I'm talking about, the memory of like getting a winning try in the grand final. No, it was a field goal. Sorry, I sold it over. And you can't not forget that as a kid.
No, of course you can't.
I'm 40 years old and I remember that at under 9. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
but it also works in reverse as well. It can be the heartbreak of
course it can.
Defeat.
But that's just,
like,
that's lit, that's
but
life.
That's just, oh, that's what it is. Like, you know, we lost our seniors grand final when we were 17 and we're playing against adults playing basketball, and we lost by 1 point. And it was going to be the last time that we'd all played together, because we were all leaving high school and everything like that. And it was heartbreaking, but it is what it is. That's just this thing that's called life.
That's just how you put up with life.
What this thing is that's called life.
I just find it hilarious that they do that, but you play as schoolboys or you do athletics and all that.
Yeah, that's right.
Wins and losses.
Yeah, that's right.
So anyway, finished on a little bit of news then.
Look, I think there's been a couple of retirements over the last week that's sort of come out. Anthony Don has come out and said that he's going to retire at the end, or, you know, he's basically done for the year and he's retiring from the Gold Coast. He's been a bit of a cult hero, I think, for the Titans since he's played there. You know, 152 games. He's the highest. Well, he's the all-time try scorer there at 82 tries for the club. So that was a little bit of a sad news, I think, for me. I've always not the fastest, not the most graceful winger around, but he was always super effective and he'd always give it his all. Like, he was, he just loved watching Anthony Don play and the way that he'd sort of gone about his business. Like I said, not the most skillful. Yeah, you know, not the most graceful, but you can still be an effective first grade. Played 152 first grade games.
And he's a one club player.
It was crazy. And the other one is James Maloney, who's living his best life in the south of France. And Catalans is doing really well in the Super League this year. I think they're on top of the ladder at the moment. And he's decided to hang up the boots at the end of the year. And he's got an extremely accomplished career.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he does. I mean, I could go through everything of James Maloney for the New South Wales Blues and all that, but yeah, he right.
Well, 4 years, he played 14 Origins. He's been influential, you know, in that regard for the Blues. He's played three tests. Yeah, he's a two-time premiership winner. He took the Warriors to an unlikely grand final.
Yeah. Yeah, he was still
playing well over in the Super League.
The little bit of news I had just to finish on, you know, I guess sort of tying into the Super League was Brodie Croft getting a deal with English Super League club Salford early in the week on a two-year deal.
I did hear that, yeah.
Interesting, but it's stuff that sort of come out with it later, sort of, you know, this, you know, it went there with huge expectations and blah, 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 but I think the thing that I noticed to come back that Andrew Johns come out and said he'll never play in the NRL again, he believes.
Oof, ouch.
So that's some scathing sort of words.
That's a very large fall from grace then, isn't it? You know, you're the starting halfback for the Melbourne Storm and you're playing in that system, and then you go to the Broncos as sort of a high profile sort of signing there, and you just fall completely off the map.
But just to hear that, and you're right, and that's what he did. Like that's it. Even Lockie sort of come out and defended him because he's director, obviously. And just
of course he did. He would have been the one that signed him.
Because he reckons it felt that there was too much pressure on his shoulders to perform, which is half true. I'd definitely say there was way too much expectation on him. A little bit.
I mean, yeah, okay, that's fair enough. But you know,
you still need to back it up.
Of course you do. And I mean, and he was fighting for his position most weeks. He couldn't lock it down. So, yeah. Is that on him? Is that, you know, is he a product of the Melbourne Storm system? Do you know what I mean? And then comes up to Brisbane and can't get the job done.
I get it. I'm very sick of hearing it that when they leave Melbourne that, you know, don't leave Melbourne because when you leave Melbourne you'll get, you know, paid heaps, but you know you won't live up to those expectations that you had at Melbourne.
It's true, unfortunately, half of it is true.
I mean, it was only
more than half of it's true.
Who was the one that triggered the high profile forward that left and didn't really live up to, I guess, the money? He went to the Broncos, trying to think.
Adam Blair was one because he signed for the Tigers and he was horrendous the couple of years that he had with the Tigers. And then, you know,
he was pretty good at the Broncos.
Come into that Broncos and he was actually pretty good. You know, he was in that Broncos grand final. So, you know, the grand final side that they lost to in 2015. So, you know, and he by the time he'd sort of finished his career off at the Warriors, he was less than effective. But yeah, he's for me, that's the first name that always comes to mind is, you know, especially, you know, in a, when you're an influential forward like he was, and then his next contract, like you said, he got paid fairly well, but yeah,
that is true. I mean, it happens a lot.
Sick
of hearing it, but sometimes it's sort of half true, I suppose, when you do hear it, or when they, on the flip side, or when they come to Melbourne and there's nothing, and then they turn into, you know, for small contracts, and then he turns them into massive contracts.
Yeah, that's right.
So
Aiden Tolman's another one that comes to mind, but yeah, he's still, I think he's still a very effective player. I think, you know, on a fairly poor, you know, Canterbury side over the last few years, and now he's with the Sharks.
I thought those first couple of years he was great with the Bulldogs, to be completely honest.
No, he was.
So, but he fell a bit of the map, yeah. That'll do it for this round 22 of our NRL pod. As always, our socials are Twitter at Final Play Pod, Facebook Final Play Podcast, where you can get all our links to our podcast as well as the one gimco.com.au. There's surely they're into the thick of trading cards coming, you know, with all the NFL coming up and the
trading card delights,
NBA sort of, you know, fringing around again, and then obviously the final series for, you know, for both the AFL and the NRL. I'm assuming this would be right at that prime of the season.
Oh yeah, it's prime card breaking season. But the NBA. The NBA basically never stops, even though after the season finishes. So that's always like one of the more popular ones. But you know, they do AFL every day. there's generally more than one NRL one a week. Every now and then, yeah, you always have your NBA Fridays. Every now and then you'll get an NBA Sunday. You know, the NFL is starting to ramp up again. So, you know, they'll be back in full effect in the next couple of weeks. So that'll be fun. So, you know, get across to those guys. They always do well by us. So,
yeah,
you know, we try and do our best by them to give them a little plug here as well. So, you know, shout out to those guys as always. And, you know, Eureka Sports Cards on Facebook. So, yeah. We always give a shout out to those guys. So, well, we've got a fairly good relationship with them. So, you know, we support them, support us. Yeah, check Beautiful. Us out on Twitter and Facebook and SoundCloud and Spotify and all those places where you can get us.
Well, my name is Jason Prime Card Break Time Smith.
It's always Prime Card Breaking Time, really. So Miles, the cards never stop plumb. So,
yeah, I bet the cards never stop for you.
No, they don't. They just they never stop. So
that's good.
Yeah, and there's an element of luck to it, and you know, it's always fun.
Like gambling. There's an element of luck to it.
That's right.
Well, it is. It's literally like gambling. Well, or stock markets.
Like getting in the lotto every week.
Stock market. It's all the same. It's all the same. So have a good week, everyone.
All right. See ya.